Bonjour!
Comme ça, I'm Tink Laraval.
And I'm Dr. Catherine Wu, and you're listening to the Cultural Quotient Podcast.
In Season 1, we introduce the world to cultural intelligence, where it comes from and how it can help you with your cross-cultural relationships.
Now we are back for Season 2, where we share more stories and show you how CQ shows up in real life.
If you like what you hear, give us 5 stars or leave us a comment, question or feedback. We'll be happy to hear from you.
And now, enjoy the show!
I'm the head of communications for Dräger in Southeast Asia.
Andy, I understand that you are originally from Taiwan.
Yeah, and I was born in Taiwan, and then my family immigrated when I was 10. And I lived in the U.S. most of my life. After graduate school, went to Beijing to work for a few years. And then now I've been in Singapore for over 10 years. I've been covering the China and Southeast Asia markets, you know, Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, for the last 15 years.
Wow, so you have a...
Bonjour!
Comme ça? I'm Tink Laraval.
And I'm Dr. Catherine Wu, and you're listening to the Cultural Quotient Podcast.
In Season 1, we introduce the world to cultural intelligence, where it comes from and how it can help you with your cross-cultural relationships.
Now we are back for Season 2, where we share more stories and show you how CQ shows up in real life.
If you like what you hear, give us 5 stars or leave us a comment, question or feedback. We'll be happy to hear from you.
And now, enjoy the show!
Very international background. Where did you start your career, actually?
After business school, grad school, went to Beijing. I started... just work for a professor for I think it was 2 or 3 months on a consulting project for like a R&D process improvement for a major athletic shoe company in China. And then I moved on to marketing for a mobile technology company, internet companies, and then later CRM consulting. Been around quite a bit and eventually... ended up with Dräger Medical and a safety technology company.
Okay. So that's quite an unusual way to start a career, moving to China. What was it like?
Yeah, it was strange. It's like right from the start already making the wrong wrong move, you know. I think looking back, apparently you're supposed to work in your home country for a few years and get promoted and then move to become an expat, but that wasn't how I started. After school, I did study abroad in Beijing for a few months. I thought, well, I speak Chinese, and just studied business. And back then, business in China was booming, so the economy was growing rapidly. I think it was around 2006, 2008, during the Olympics time. So there's a lot of excitement in Beijing. So I thought I'd just go and see what happens.
That's really cool. Well, in this podcast, the idea of talking about cultural intelligence and what it's like to experience and explore different cultures. What was your most memorable experience working in China?
Yeah, I always like to tell the story of, I think maybe the first 2 months or first 1.5 months. I got assignment to lead a sales team of, I think, 10 or 15 sales reps to go to Changchun. This is a very old industrial, huge city northeast of China. And my task is to go there and win back market share. I think the target was to go from 5% market share back to 80 or something. Wow. It was something crazy, but it was a new experience. I went there. We were selling some type of software package for internet cafes. So in China, you have these huge internet cafes with 300 seats, 500 seats. And they do big business. You know, I think a lot of students, even just regular people that go into these internet cafes to watch movies, to play games. So the company I work for, they buy all these copyrighted movies and TV shows, and they package it and they sell it legally to distribute it to this internet cafe so people at the cafes can watch these movies. It was quite a new concept, but I went there with, I think, 15 sales reps. The moment we arrived, you know, I was told to go visit the cultural ministry just to say hi, you know, we were here. And then when we got out, it was like this guy outside waiting for us. And he, you know, introduced himself. He's a general manager, apparently, of the competitor. So they know immediately that when we arrived, and they knew where we were. And he invited me to dinner, the sales manager and myself. So that night, we met at this really nice restaurant, and the general manager of this competing company. At one point, he was telling me his story, and he was talking about, like, oh, some business people are so unreasonable. Sometimes they come to my office, and I have to take an axe from my desk and slam it on the table and show them that I really mean business. And in my mind, I just thought it was so ridiculous, but I'm also curious. So I leaned forward and like, oh, so, and what happened? I was just kind of engrossed in the story. Anyways, I thought it was a long, but it was a nice dinner. And, you know, during the dinner, he goes, oh, Andy, you know, in China here, you have to be careful. You shouldn't be getting so close to the government. You know, you come here and go to the ministry already. If you ask him to help do favors for you, we will not be happy as well because he also has connections. I told him, look, I was told to come and go there and just say hi, like say, hey, we're here. So, you know, but a Beijing company with a lot of people arriving and going to internet cafes might like be a little weird. So I just went like, hey, this is what I'm doing. So they know what I'm doing. That's it. I didn't ask for any favors. And he goes, oh, okay. So anyways, after the dinner, the local sales manager and myself, you know, we went outside. And then we walked very far. And when we was far enough, the sales manager turned around, stopped me, and looked at me in the face, and he goes, I'm not sure if you're really stupid or really brave. And I didn't know what he was talking about. And then he mentioned to me, like, you know, when he was talking about the axe, the story of axe, he was trying to threaten you. And you didn't even, like, realize that he was trying to scare you. And you keep asking me, well, what happened, what happened? He was like, mocking my you know, my lines of questions. I'm like, so naive. I said, oh, okay, I didn't really realize that. And he goes, the worst is that at one point, he said, yeah, you know, your company's reputation is, what is it, like dishonest or not reputable. By the way, all of this was in Chinese. So the competing general manager says, yeah, your company in this region does not have a good reputation, something like that. So I was curious, so I leaned forward and I asked him, like, what do you mean by that? In my mind, you know, I was like being nice, or I was being respectful. Like, I was like, well, what do you mean? So I said, 你是什么意思? And apparently, sales manager said, 你是什么意思? It's like, most people interpret it as like, what are you going to do about it? You know, and he said, and you lean your head forward like that. Like it was just so like, it was just so stupid or so insane because he saw the general manager flinch a little bit, like he was going to punch my face. But I just wanted to know what's going on. So yeah, I spoke Chinese, but in the end, I guess I was also a foreigner, and they just thought I was just a clueless guy. He's like, yeah, you're such an idiot. You're like, you lean your head forward, like, what do you mean by that? It's like looking back, you know, like, wow, you know, people were quite aggressive and were supposed to scare me, but I totally missed it. I don't know if that's any value of CQ or cross-culture skills, but that's the most memorable thing, I think, for me in my 5 years in Beijing.
This is so interesting. You went to China and you had that moment lost in translation. The communication wasn't working. But Andy, you're Chinese, right? You grew up in Taiwan. Yeah. So what did you think about all of this as a Chinese in this situation?
I find it funny. I don't take it too seriously, and was pretty sure I was not in any physical harm. I mean, the guy was trying to scare me, but I don't think it was any, you know, any real threat. And I do realize, even though, you know, coming from Taiwan and then I'm in China, like a lot of my ideas of the Chinese traditions is very different. Like that sales manager was mentioning to me later, I think it was a couple of years younger than me. And, you know, he was talking to me like a brother. He's like, oh, you know, you're such an idiot. But then he also said that, Andy, I've never met anybody so traditional. You're so strange. So I'm Chinese, but I have this more traditional approach to life or to business. And also, I'm not really a business person. My parents always tell me, like, you didn't grow up in a business family. My dad was a dentist, and, you know, you're supposed to study hard and do some type of a skilled job. So we never thought about doing anything entrepreneurial, any business types. Ultimately, I felt I was being authentic to myself. Anyways, I'm not the slick, you know, business guy that's going there trying to, I don't know, fool this general manager of 30 years, my senior, and a major local business person. So I feel okay. I am who I am, and I think I represented the company in a way that you know, hey, we're just here to try to promote this product. I'm not doing anything like under the table or crazy. And I think that was part of the appeal for them to send me there, because I have all these sales reps. I understand the local customs or the local businesses, but the decision making and the leadership was from me. So it's kind of like a good balance. At least that's what I tell myself.
That's a good way to rationalize the experience. So you spent about 5 years in China in different roles. This was your first jobs there. Any other interesting or memorable experiences that you carry with you today?
There was one experience where I was taking the phone call in the middle of the office at Ogilvy. I was talking to a client, it's like a very big client, major brand and with factories and everything. We're running a CRM campaign for them, and I think there was like some type of a giveaway to a big consumer brand in China. And we would just ask him, you want to give away incentive A or incentive B? I don't even remember. It's very trivial. So I was the lead consultant. The account manager was at my desk, so I put on the speaker. And then they go, I said incentive A. And then she started, like, voice getting louder and louder. You didn't show us the process, or, you know, you didn't do this step first or that step. It's so trivial. I don't even remember, like, what was the big problem. But she escalated and she just started yelling at us, like, you call yourself a professional company? We're the biggest in Beijing, in China at the time. Like, you call yourself a professional CRM strategy, you know, consulting company. You didn't do this and do that. And I explained to her, like, yeah, actually we did. We checked with you and then we did this and that. Now, if you want to change it, we're okay with changing it. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And actually, in retrospect, it wasn't that big of a deal. But she was just yelling and the entire office could hear me. But I didn't really care. I just felt she was being unreasonable, but I answered back, you know, and I was pretty calm, and then the call ended. And the next day, the VP of consulting called me in. Andy, it was like some big noise coming from your desk the other day. What happened? And then I just explained to her, and she's like, oh, okay, it's not that big of a deal. But it's just like, you know, when talking to the customer, just take a meeting room. I didn't think it was a big deal. I would just want incentive A, incentive B. I didn't know it was going to balloon up to something. It's like, yeah, you never know. Sometimes a customer gets yelled at by their bosses earlier in the morning, and then later they just turn around and they yell at you. And they know that you're right, and we did everything, you know, the process, and we agreed on it. But their boss just changed their mind, and they just get yelled at, and it's just common. And they will yell at you in the afternoon.
Wow. So after these 5 years that you spent in China, you moved to Southeast Asia. And I understand that you also had a number of roles in different countries. You worked in Indonesia, in Thailand, in Malaysia, Japan, Philippines. What did you learn from working in China that helped you lead teams in Southeast Asia?
Just to kind of put it in perspective. So I entered Dräger as a marketing communications manager doing projects all across Asia. And then we did some reorganization. We want to put more resources on a local level. So I became the head of communications for Southeast Asia. And then we want to build up a marketing team in Indonesia, one of our biggest countries. So then I was the head of marketing for Indonesia. And I was also leading the Southeast Asia marketing team for Dräger for a couple of years. And then we want to further develop, we want to start a subsidiary in Philippines. So then I was the country manager for Philippines for a couple of years. So I led quite a few different groups of colleagues, from Singaporeans to Indonesians, Filipinos. And I find that the most useful way to build up a team quickly and get some rapport is just to take them to dinner. The more dinner you take them to, somehow they're more willing to go the extra mile for you, you know, like do extra work to help you and to help the team and help each other. You know, take them to dinner as a group. It just sounds so silly, but those are the times where you get to know each other and you really build some trust. You know, you chit-chat about the family, what they like to do for fun, and do they eat spicy food? If you know that your team eats spicy food, then that's even more effective. Take them to a super spicy food dinner place. I picked that up from being in China, because in China, most groups, they have lunch almost every day. And if you do work extra time, or you go to do an event or exhibition, they'll have dinner. And I think they do that a lot more in China than in, let's say, a lot of the Southeast Asian countries. You still do it in Southeast Asia, but not as much. And if you work in a very international organization, like the group has some Germans, some Dutch, some Americans, some French, some Australians, sometimes this dinner thing is not as big of a deal and people kind of lose sight. But from my experience, taking the team out to dinner, when the team first started, maybe once a month, a couple times a month, it really pays dividends.
Yeah. Wow. That's very practical.
Sorry, just another tip for the listener. Don't take the team out to expensive dinners. Take them to normal dinners, normal places with good food. Because it's not the point to pamper them. I know your team wants you. They will say, if you ask, they always pick the most expensive place. But that's not necessary. Just take them to the place that people like, and it's where people can be comfortable, and the food is also good.
Okay, great. So besides taking the team to dinner, how do you prepare for international assignments that whenever you take one?
You just have to go in and just start talking to people, start working. So, my preparation generally is pretty easy. You just ask your boss or people related to the project to send you previous PowerPoints, Excel sheets, reports that's related to the assignment, the task, or this new country assignment. And then you read them, and then you started talking to more people, and you let them know this is what you plan to do, and just ask for advice, and what would they recommend as next steps, or what do they think about your ideas or your plans, and who else do you need to talk to, or what you should do, and then just move forward. Go to the country, talk to local teams, talk to customers, and just keep moving forward. The homework is usually pretty quick, 3 hours, 2 hours of reading. It's already enough, and just start talking to people. So people don't feel like you just come here and didn't prepare and talk nonsense or tell me how you're going to solve everything that they're facing. It's not...
Great. So from all this time that you've been in Asia, almost 17 years, what has been your most challenging experience from an intercultural perspective?
There's one time where I wanted the team to submit their report on time. And I thought it'd be a good idea to give penalties, like people pay like $1 or $2 or maybe $5. I forgot. I was quite naive. I just thought I'd give it a try. And of course, this rather experienced a senior guy, he didn't submit the report on time. My boss was yelling at me because I didn't submit the weekly report on time. And I was like, well, because the other guys, I need them. So I asked everybody to send the report on time. To me, so that I can send to my boss. I thought the money was quite trivial. It's not like really breaks anybody's bank. Of course, this guy didn't submit on time. He was busy, blah, blah, blah. So I said, okay, you owe me like $5 or something like that. He's a field guy, field marketing. He does a lot of events, and he's a kind of a rough guy. I remember him coming back to the office and me leaving the office. Of course, the report was late. And I see him, and it's like, hey, you owe me $5, something like that. I thought it was just kind of laid back thing. And he's like, I'm not going to pay. And he just looks at me. And I said, what do you mean? Like, we agreed that we're going to submit the report on time. You sent it to me. And I need to submit it to my boss. And you were late, so make me late. And then what's the problem? And he just like, no, you're not going to, I'm not going to pay. And he's like, something like you try or something. I think it was in Chinese. And I remember like this awkward moment. Like I look at him and he looked at me in the lobby. It was like a big office building. And he gave me that look. And then I just looked at him. I don't know what else to do. I just look at him. It was a kind of like a stare down, I mean, he reported to me, but he was has more experience. He's kind of like a tradesman. He's been doing this event marketing for a long time. And then he looks at me, he was just so angry, and they turn around and he just like walked away. I realized to some people, and maybe in China, maybe it was kind of insulting for a younger guy to be penalizing the older guy for money, for not submitting the report on time. And he thinks he's working hard and he has a good excuse. And to me, it's like, okay, I appreciate your excuse, yes. But you still didn't submit on time, and we said that we're gonna like pay $5. Maybe it was like a lunch fund or something. I forgot what it was. I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but obviously it was a big thing for him, and he was really pissed off. So I think that was probably the most challenging things in Asia. I mean, there was a few other things where I didn't think it was a big deal, but it really, I don't know if I hurt people's feelings. Maybe some people's feelings were hurt, and I just didn't quite realize it. I might have done it a couple times, you know, in the last 17 years. And yeah, I think those are the tougher moments where I realized, oh, okay, my worldview and what I think wasn't a big deal, even like economically for, I know, you know, how much money they make, and I know that it's not that big of a deal, but I think the symbolism or whatever the unwritten rule is just doesn't seem right. And sometimes I just find myself stepping into it. And you know, that guy, after a couple of weeks of not paying me, 4 weeks later, 5 weeks later, he's back to normal, jolly. He's like, hey, Andy, you know, kind of joking around. We had a good relationship after that as well. So I don't think I permanently damaged the relationship. And maybe that's because I really didn't press too hard and the money really wasn't that high and didn't really make him lose face in front of other people. But just on a one-on-one level, you know, it was just like a rude awakening, like, okay, maybe this was not the respectful thing to do, I guess.
Interesting. What about your most inspiring experience from an intercultural perspective?
When you're talking to some of the colleagues in the country teams like Indonesia, Philippines, these developing countries, you know, and you come across older people that maybe that's reporting to you, but they're 10 years older than you, 15 years, so they have a lot of experience. So maybe they, on a business organization level, they're not really skilled with PowerPoints and, you know, the business speak or the, you know, the management concepts, but you know that they work very hard in their life and they make good customer contacts and they develop their skills, clinical knowledge and sales and some technical knowledge. A lot of them will work very hard for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. And what's inspiring to me is that, you know, they just tell me their stories, like, you know, where they come from, you know, coming from small villages. Maybe they got a scholarship to go to nursing school. They, you know, go through nursing school, 10 years as a nurse in a big public hospital. And then, you know, somebody invited them to an interview to sell some medical device, and they work hard to learn how to sell something. They had shy personalities in the beginning, but, you know, now you see them, like, hugging customers and talking and teaching them how to use very sophisticated devices. And you realize, like, some people really came a long ways, and economically, she was describing to me something like, you know, very basic housing, and going from that to being able to afford a really nice apartment in the city, you know, sending their kids to school. I think it's quite inspiring. It's amazing, you know, how these opportunities can propel people's lives and maybe shoot up two or three economic levels, whatever that is. But it's like profound improvement in their life is quite inspiring.
Wow. Reflecting on 16 years of working in Asia, you are leading teams and you are a leader in your organization. So how have all these life experiences shaped your leadership style today?
I never thought about a style. I think you learn different techniques. In your careers, you enter a company, somebody teaches you. One of my first jobs, my manager is like, okay, you got to learn this. You know, it was like a sales role. And he said, got to learn how to do a customer-centric sales, something like that. And the whole idea is you ask questions, and then you find their pain points, and then you ask, like, would it be helpful to you if I were to have a solution that exactly solves your problem A that you just told me like 2 minutes ago, or problem C? And somehow I change it to when I talk to my team and colleagues, and it's just like, okay, I understand issue A and B. And then, would you say that it makes sense for us then to do X to address A and B? I ask the leading question to say, does it make sense for me to do this? So my leadership style is simply, so I just recognize the issue and I give two or three options. And sometimes I will tell the team, like, I'm leaning towards this option, that option, but I give them an opportunity to respond. Is it inclusive is the right word, but I try to, like, involve the team, so try to get to where I want us to go. But I always leave it open, like, okay, if there are other ideas, I'm open to it. So I kind of use my old kind of customer-centric or pressure selling option B approach. So I kind of combine that in my approach to leading a team.
This brings me to my last question, Andy. What advice would you give managers looking to take on global leadership responsibilities?
Maybe this comes full circle to my overly simplistic leadership style that I just shared with you. I think my advice is to be prepared to at some point realize that there are some people smarter than you and more capable than you in the developing countries, in your teams. It's maybe one hierarchy or two hierarchy below you. And you know, I think sometimes you're coming from the regional headquarter or global headquarter, where you're coming from more developed markets, and you go to a market and you're like, okay, let me tell you guys, you know, how marketing is done. You know, like, oh, you guys, marketing is so primitive. And sometimes you'll be surprised and maybe a little bit shocked when you get some feedback with some really capable people that you thought should be there to listen to your great science. And sometimes it might also shake in your confidence a little bit. I've seen it happen where I'm the person that's surprising people at the headquarters, and I do see them kind of be a bit shaken, maybe a bit uncomfortable, where I kind of took over a kind of shine, and, you know, I did my thing, and, like, wow, you know, like, this guy really showing me how things are done. And of course I tried to do it tactfully, but it was an awkward situation, but it was good for me because I'm doing something better and then advancing kind of within the organization. But when that happened to me, you know, I think in the last 10 years, I think it was a couple of times, like, wow, yeah, I really failed in a couple of things, and or this other guy in the country side, and all of a sudden starting to speak more sense and led the project to a better place than I did. And when you're on the receiving end of that, it can be shocking and hurt your ego a little bit, like, wow, that guy's much, much better than me. And you do get shaken, especially when you fail, you know, on a few things. For people taking on these kind of global international roles, you come from a good school and you had some really amazing experience, and then you see some other person, less experience, maybe had less opportunities than you, doing much better than you. You know, I think that can shake in your confidence and also can bother you a bit deep inside. I mean, of course, you're happy that, you know, the organization, things are moving forward, but you question yourself, you question, like, you know, whether you're really the right person, or question your own value. Organizations are always hiring better and better people in the country level, because maybe your headquarter is in a city or in a place where maybe there's only one great university there. But then when you go to a developing country, you start hiring from cities where there are a lot of super smart people that's coming to apply for work for your international company. So sometimes you'll be surprised, like, wow, like, you get a lot more talent in some locations than others. And it's a good thing for an organization, and you should be happy about it. But also be prepared that there are good people coming up, and then you might need to adjust how you contribute. And I think to me that was probably the biggest challenge. It's not really cross-cultural, probably more career-wise. But yeah, when you take on an international role, you're no longer just within your office. You're talking to a lot of new people and more talented people from top schools, from that developing country, and be prepared to be surprised. If it hasn't happened to you yet, you're like, oh yeah, this is great. I always love great people, you know, joining my organization. Yeah, I'm like, you know, the best leader. But when it actually happens to you and you think of yourself a certain way and you're failing at certain projects and tasks, it can be tough to work through that, and just be prepared.
Again, a very important and practical piece of advice from experience. Andy, thanks a lot for spending the time with us tonight. That was great.
It was fun.
Thank you for listening.
Remember to give us 5 stars or leave a comment, question, or feedback on LinkedIn.
Till next time.